Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. Men's Tea Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway, now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagland, Corey Majors, the returning famous Mike Bassick.
God, I had to sign so many autographs when I got home at midnight last night.
I bet you did.
I did. I actually did because they sent them through the mail.
Oh, hey, okay.
I thought you were saying that like you got off the plane and people were waiting for Mike. That'd be awesome.
Nobody was waiting for us at the airport.
And then, of course, Alec Medford. Now, I get it. People are upset today. They want to be mad. I get why that is. But I have one bit of positive news for you to start off the show.
Thursday when we're at the ballpark,
nope. Yes.
Kamar Rocker's pitching.
Okay, that is positive news. Other positive news. With a final score of 44-19, the New Orleans Saints defeated the Dallas Cowboys. But more importantly, for the 1,086th time in NFL history, that, my friends, is scoreigami, Corey.
That is.
We did it.
Thank you, Lucy.
That's how you block an extra point.
Negative scoregami right there. That's a good question. If they would have made that extra point,
not a scoregami,
it would have been scoregami.
Think.
Wow. That's
huge.
Well, thanks a lot.
That's when the defense stepped up.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
For special teams doing that.
Now, I guess we should get into the rest of the game.
All right.
Sean asked the question. You gave an answer. I kind of threw mine out there. When did you know that the Cowboys were done yesterday? And then my side question, I know this is a tough question, was there anything you actually liked?
I can answer that first. The move that CeeDee Lamb put on the defender to get the touchdown. Aside from that, Kevin, no. Maybe a Jalen Tolbert reception. He had a couple of like
and they went back and got the fumble.
He got a couple of difficult grabs yesterday that I was very impressed with. And yeah, the hustle play to get back and get that fumble, which should have never happened in the first place.
Sure.
But yeah, those were the only two things I think throughout the entire game. Because I mean, from the get, man, you were like, okay, you're from behind, you're having to chase. All right, we got a field goal. And then it was just all downhill continually. So, yeah, Kevin, it was a tough game to look at and say you were pleased about anything that you can look for and say it'll go further this week. So, no, man, nothing. It was miserable. It was miserable. It was embarrassing. It was awful. It was ridiculous. What other words can you come up with for how bad they played yesterday?
Preposterous?
Preposterous. Keep throwing words out there, Mike.
All right, I'm going to...
Disappointing as hell.
Yes, yeah, I agree with that. I'm going to go ahead and throw out cut number 6 because I still foolishly... I always hope that something magical is going to happen in a sporting event. So the Cowboys are down 41-19. There's about 12 minutes left. They finally made a defensive stop as... My wife had been teaching, and she goes, so what's going wrong in this game? I go, I need to double check, but I'm almost positive the Saints have only had the ball 6 times, and they have 6 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, we stopped a touchdown. The offense has got the ball back. I'm hoping for a miracle. And then this is when I knew the game was over.
First down, Prescott back. Good block from Steele over the middle. Pass is intercepted at the 35-yard line as Jalen Brooks fell
down. All
right,
you can cut it off because he's going to make a lengthy return. Now, by no means am I saying that Dak cost you the game. Everybody knows the defense cost you the game, and they were terrible. But I was still holding out magical hope that at 41-19, we could score 3 touchdowns, get a 2-point conversion, get it to overtime or something like that. And when that happened, I was like, okay, well, it's not been all day, and this just cements that we're done. We're going to lose. And so it was that play. I still had hope until then.
Kevin,
just like, probably done.
I went to look at the Panthers and Carol and Saints game. This is their possessions. Touchdown, field goal, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, punt, punt. So they did the exact same. They made the Cowboys look like the Panthers this week.
That's not good. I saw the Panthers.
So there's 750 people right now on YouTube listening to us.
And they're grumpy as hell, I bet.
Thank you. This is my question, and maybe you guys don't remember. On Monday, when the Cowboys destroyed the Browns on Sunday.
Yep.
Do you think there were 750 people on YouTube, or do you think more people come to YouTube like nationally?
I think it was just a touch under that. It was actually pretty close.
Right around 700 or so?
It was pretty close to start things off. But that is a really
good question. You got the Mike Bassett really bump today.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
I'm back, guys.
Yeah. There you go. And then from the 214, this is a whole other thing. I heard it was almost like a Saints home game. One of the notes I made is, at best, it felt like a neutral site game.
You can go to Alec Medford on that. Like, I think every text, Alec, you sent yesterday, because you were at the game, was that thing was absolutely booty for Cowboys fans.
Yeah, it was rough, because I walked in, the traffic was insane, so I walked in right as the Saints scored the first touchdown of the game, and I couldn't see what was happening right when I walked in, so I assumed we got a turnover, we scored. No. It was a Saints touchdown, and every time they scored, deafening who dat chants just all over the stadium. It felt like you said, at best neutral site.
Yes.
It felt like a road game.
Yeah,
it really did.
And I could definitely see that, because there were plenty of times where, and you see this a lot with Cowboys games, usually though it's to our advantage, where you'll see a penalty called against the home team and you'll listen to people be like,
Well, that Cleveland game, how many times did we point out that we felt like that sounded like a home game at times?
I'm not trying to be disrespectful or hurtful. Did that change a little bit when the Hurricane Katrina displaced a lot of people into Texas?
I think you're dead
on. So a lot of Saints fans that lived in the New Orleans area in 06, do I have the year right?
I think that is correct.
Moved to Houston and Dallas and other parts of Texas because their homes were destroyed,
and
their communities were destroyed.
Houston, yeah.
And so
I think that is so a very, I never thought about it like that before.
But like, I'm just wondering, over now it's been 17 years, 18 years, is that a lot of them decided to just stay here. And
you
can
start
here,
like, next generation Saints fans.
Yeah, and so there's, I think, a lot more Saints fans. Not that there weren't Saints fans before Hurricane Katrina in Texas or in Dallas-Fort Worth, but I think that it has expanded through that displacement because of the destruction Hurricane Katrina did.
I think that is a fair point, and I understand some of the other texts that are coming in right now. I'm just going to read you a couple of them. Again, I'm not saying this is where the blame lies for yesterday at all. For the 682, dude, we have a $60 million QB who isn't elevating S. And then another, man, there are a lot of texts from the 214. Kevin, you're right. It's mostly the defense that failed miserably. But if our field goals were touchdowns instead, I think we could have had a fourth quarter comeback. Now, that is a side conversation that we can have.
We can talk about that at some point.
Yeah, at some point. But Mike, you brought up something fascinating off air, talking about the percentage of people who, I think it's on both sides, honestly, who are like, I'm ready to blame Dak no matter what. And then there's other people, and I'm just going to mention his name because I have a lot of respect for him. I think David Hellman has a wealth of football knowledge that is tough to beat, especially when it comes to the Cowboys, but honestly, the entire NFL. He said something yesterday, I'm going to paraphrase, and he was projecting, I'm already frustrated with people trying to blame this on Dak, which I think is fair. But then he goes, when he's had almost a superhuman effort today. And that's where I'm like, no, don't be the other 20%. Because it feels like there's 60, maybe I'm off a little bit
that
more.
That are sane?
That are like in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel like there's 20% on either side that no matter what happens, Dak does no wrong, and no matter what happens, it's always Dak's fault.
I wonder if for David Hellman, because does he still work on the Ocho show every once in a while?
I haven't seen him on there.
Okay, I didn't know if it's because he has
to do more writing now.
Debate with LeSean McCoy. Who is no matter what, right?
It gets you more entrenched in your ideas.
He's insane, because I said, before we went on the air, I said, what if I did this today? And not that I'm playing a role, but I was like, what if I just kept doing this for 4 hours and just said, they held him to 44. He's $60 million. Can't he get to 45? We're just asking for 45. We're not asking for 50. And if I just kept doing that, but I said, I think there would be 20% of our audience that would eventually agree with me.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing that because I don't believe that. Do I think Dak had a superhuman great game? No. Did he have a bad game? No, he didn't have a bad game. But I do think there's a point, but I won't go as extreme as this. Yes, you would like to see more touchdowns. And yes, you didn't score enough points, but you can't ask somebody to score 45.
That's true. The only thing I was going to point out, if the defense would have eventually got it together, which they didn't, there were absolutely two passes that Dak underthrew that were touchdowns. They were both touchdown passes.
Overthrew a touchdown, too.
But the receiver had to stop up and go back. And then what happened on both of those drives?
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Field goals. So that costs you 8 points right there. I would have loved to make the argument that, oh, those were game changers. But then when the Saints keep scoring touchdown after touchdown after touchdown, I'm not going to say that. Both things can be true. I wish Dak would have hit those two touchdown passes, but we're probably still going to lose because of the defense anyway.
There were also two passes from Dak that floated a little too long and allowed safety or cornerback to get to the spot and absolutely kill the receiver.
One of those was CeeDee Lamb.
And if I'm the receiver, I'm looking at my quarterback going, come on, man, you gotta set me up better than that. Like you're this far into your career. You can't have that happening to me. And Kevin, on the front of Dak, he's responsible for this offense. From what we understand, at some point last season, he told Mike McCarthy, I don't want you calling the plays anymore. Let me do this. Throughout the entire game, Tom Brady pointed out how great of a field general he is at the line, changing things, pointing here, getting everything set up. So if he's the one that's in control of the offense, he has to take some of the blame for how the offense looked if he's calling a play and it's going for 3 yards on a run to the right.
If you're a new listener, thank you for listening, because Corey, I'm just going to expand on what you're saying here. I am not a Dak fan. I'm not a Dak hater. I think he's a good quarterback. Okay, that's I think where most of us stand.
I think he's a good quarterback too.
He's a good quarterback. Now, I did get to watch some of the Kansas City game as the Ranger game ended in Seattle. It was on a television. We're waiting for the bus to go to the airport and everything. I'm getting to watch quite a bit of that. Mahomes and Dak should never be put in the same category. They're not close to the same quarterback. But watching that game, Mahomes didn't have his best game of the year.
Yep.
Mahomes struggled at times. That was a battle. His teammates on defense picked him up. They made some big time plays. They got a fumble from Burrow. They returned it for a touchdown. That counts as 7 points for it's weird, but at the end it counts for 7 points for your offense. When it says how many points does your offense score per game, that counts as your offense scored a touchdown there. It's a weird stat, but that's just the way they count it. So Dak didn't have a great game yesterday. He's a good quarterback. I agree with somewhat of the standard of he doesn't elevate you to a level you need to be at, like the way Patrick Mahomes can in playoff games, and we've seen him do that. But yesterday, Patrick Mahomes, in a weird way, had a similar game to Dak, but his defense stepped up and was able to create turnovers and slow down Joe Burrow. And the Cowboys, if Dak isn't having his best game, against another team that has some offensive weapons and stuff, at times it seems like the Cowboys struggle to help out Dak if he's only leading you to field goals.
And another thing, because this seems to be another thing that's popping up, I completely agree that I think Micah Parsons was blatantly held on that Saints second touchdown. Like, I thought it was blatant. And
there was a blatant face mask, too, that didn't get called.
I felt they got jobbed on those calls for sure. But I'm going to say multiple things can be true. I thought they got jobbed on a couple of calls that I don't know how that would have impacted the game. If you if you can go back and say, and Micah would have gotten the quarterback, maybe he would have forced a fumble. Like, there's a lot of things. I have no idea. But I think that's fair. I think Dak having some struggle throws is fair. And I think the defense being just terrible most of the day. I think all of those things can be fair things that you say.
When you read the Hellman thing and it said superhuman, I thought he was just saying that he was as human as you can get. Like, he was the most human. Because he didn't look like a an NFL quarterback. Sure. He looked like a very human football player out there. But man, I will be critical of Dak and the offense. Yes. And I think that's fair. I think the other part, though, is if I'm going to take the pie and say, where is the blame pie go? 10% Dak for me, 90% defensive line. That defensive line got pushed all over the field. That offensive line for the Saints, their blocking was brilliant yesterday. And Mike Zimmer had no clue how to stop it. He didn't have a single – they looked like they didn't work all week on stopping this type of offensive system. And that being said – the way that the Saints are playing, count on them being in the playoffs at the end of the season, because that running scheme, that offense right now is good enough to go along with a very tough defense for what they have.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Let's keep the Cowboys content going. Corey brought this up. You've had two Cowboys games, two blowouts. So which team do you think the Cowboys actually are closer to being? Let's talk about it next right here on The Fan.
Just an outstanding first possession for the Saints, who are first and goal at the 5. Straight eye formation. Carr will hand the ball to Kamara, coming on the right side to the goal line, pushes through a tackle and scores. Touchdown, New Orleans.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 Through the Fan, where the Cowboys get absolutely worked against the Saints, and they lose 44-19. Small consolation, it was a scoregami. But
that's it's no consolation.
Okay. Tiny iota of a consolation?
If you're a fan of scoregami,
and I am,
then you're okay with it.
I mean, I'm not okay with it.
If you're a Cowboys fan, you're still nauseous.
I'm not okay with it. I'm just like a tiny, tiny bit. That's
furious.
Just one game. It's a long season. The longest season of all sports.
Mike, he's right. No, I think you're right about that. Like, it is game two of the season. Not the longest season in sports.
Yeah.
It is game.
We'll hear that at noon.
It's game two of this season. And you have a win and a loss.
Yes.
The season isn't over based on that. Like, that's a reality. And I know somebody's, oh, there goes Homer Corey. No, that's just the reality of football. Like, sure. You every week you have a new opportunity to change it. But more than anything, you have to change your identity of preparation, your identity of physicality, your identity of what your mentality is when you go up against any opponent. You don't take them lightly by any means. You go in there and you stick it to them. The Cowboys aren't the stickers, though. The Cowboys are the ones that get stuck. That's just over the last, 5 years now, it's felt like any time they've gone up and against an opponent that's better, their identity is to just ball up and say, we're done for the day. We don't have an answer for you. And I don't like that part of it. So, yes, there is plenty of time in this season plenty of time to still go 4-1 in the first 5 games this stretch.
It's going to look significantly tougher, but you're right.
But if you show up with that kind of game plan and
attitude,
effort, I don't even want to call it effort. It didn't feel like effort. If you show up that way again, you're going to be out easy.
This, and I'm not disagreeing with this at all, but this just makes no sense to me as a strategy. From the 6-8-2, the defense had no idea how to deal with the motion before the snap. If there was motion, the defense lost their assignments. If that's the case, that is a shocking indictment of Mike Zimmer, because we talked all week about how much they had upped their not only play action, but their pre-snap motion. We talked about that again and again and again. And we're not on the team in the league. So if we're able to notice that straight away, point it out, surely the defensive coordinator who's been in the NFL and has forgotten more about football than I'll ever know is all over this. But it did seem like the defense was completely lost at times.
It is another thing to add to it is new coordinator with team that you're like, okay, we kind of know the skill set of some of these players. What is the skill set of this coordinator? How are they going to play it? The film was one game against the Panthers. That's what you had to work off of. Other than going back and, I mean, hell, maybe Mike Zimmer should have known a little bit better considering that guy was on his team as a coordinator for him at one point. Maybe he should have known a little bit better. But that a little more growing and teaching your team throughout this season will be very helpful. But I don't think you have on the defensive line, I still don't think you have the body, the mentality, the ability to stop something like that.
Now, I don't think you're going to like either one of these texts, but I'm going to try to give you something that's nice. From the 214, at least something good came up yesterday. I used the Tolo Prize Picks code, bet $20 and won $500. And then from the 682, I was at the game thanks to y'all's ticket giveaway, but there was no home field advantage. How the hell does that happen? And like, I don't know who you want to compare this to or whatever, but I hope Sean and RJ ask Jerry tomorrow about all the fans from New Orleans that were in there, because it seems like that's something that would particularly bother him.
He said many times, Kevin, only 7% of fans have ever been in a stadium.
I've heard.
But he's also said many times he's happy that the NFL is popular. Like, that's the reality is, I don't care how the fans get there. I just want the fans to be able to get there. So if it was one of those, you're expecting him to be, this is furious. My city against your city. Don't let anybody into my city's stadium. That's not Jerry Jones. And I would say it's probably not a lot of the owners who want to fill that stadium up.
So to your question, I understand the people who are saying, I think they are both teams. Like, they're an unbelievably world-crushing team when they're front-running. Mm-hmm. I get that. Yesterday kind of made me wonder if they're closer to the Saints game. Not to say that they're going to get destroyed all season, but I mean, like, are they closer to 8-9 than 10-7? Just my thought is a couple of things I worried about. You now have one offensive touchdown in the last six quarters. Now, I understand that the Browns game was over, and maybe that worked into the mindset. We talk about that all the time with the players, but look at the way things fell apart. The Cowboys were 6-13 on third down. That's fine. You're going to take that. 1-3 on fourth down. 0-3 scoring touchdowns in the red zone. And that's the part that is so freaking agitating to me. And then if I could use a weird like Rangers analogy, where sometimes we feel like they turn every pitcher they go up against into prime Clayton Kershaw, I felt like they made the Saints defense look like that yesterday with DeMario Davis wrecking shop, Alante Taylor smashing through the point of attack and getting into the backfield again and again and again. And Carl Granderson got a sack and a half, and they had seven pressures. I felt like they made players that they're not bad players by any means, but I thought they were like, hey, these guys are all going to make the all-pro team, right?
Sometimes you can make things very simple to make it very easy. I'll give you the Rangers and the Cowboys and I'll compare it, and it's going to be very simple. If you are a George Kirby, if you throw over 50% fastballs and you like executing at the top of the zone or just above the zone, the game's over. The Rangers cannot handle people that pitch that way. Yeah. It's over. What do the Rangers take advantage of offensively? Slider pitchers. Guys that love throwing the ball in the mid to high 80s with slider spin. Those are the guys they like hitting off of. So if you want to know, when are the Rangers possibly going to have a good offensive game? Usually it will be against that. Now, Cowboys, this is very simple, but it's obvious for, like Corey said, about 5 years now. If the team likes playing a little bit of smash mouth football, a little bit of bully football, and they get up by two scores early, the game's over.
Yeah.
It's the Cowboys do not like they don't like coming from behind. So honestly, you want the team to defer. In a weird way, you want the team to defer so the Cowboys could possibly get up 3-0 or 7-0 to start the game, because then it becomes tougher to get up by two scores early. If that team gets the ball first and they score a touchdown, and then you score a field goal, and then they score another touchdown and they go up 14-3, the game's over. It almost doesn't matter who you're playing. It's a simple scouting report, and every team knows it. If you get up early, two scores on the Dallas Cowboys, and you've established a little bit of a bully mentality, they will quit.
Honestly, that's why I think we should never defer. Like, I know conventional football wisdom is you win the toss, you're going to defer. I always want us to take the ball because I'm like, man, that scoreboard, and I know scoreboard will affect many players and many teams.
Well, that 10-point swing, though, Kevin.
It seems, that surely worked out in this game. But it seems like it has a disproportionate effect on the Cowboys in terms of 7-0 can feel like you're down 17-0 and vice versa.
The one of the ways that I would say to try and figure out the question that you were trying to answer here, after two consecutive blowouts, one win, one loss, which team is this Dallas Cowboys team? And welcome your 877-881-1053, your comments there and on the Twitch and YouTube.
YouTube's busy
too. Yeah, it is busy. I love it. I will say, let's take what happened in both games. Kevin, you just pointed out the red zone. Miserable. Yeah. Cowboys seem to be in a very bad place there. And last year, early in the season, they were in a bad place there as well. It would seem you were saying, hold on, we saw these ways that Brandon Cooks was getting open in the red zone. Brought us in the post game shows, just pointing out in Oxnard, we watched all these different ways to get him. Where was that in the red zone this week? The other thing, too, that is consistent in both of these games is your running backs are bad. You don't have a running game to hang your hat on. Your running backs are bad. Rico Dowdle, okay, you're a backup running back. Deuce Vaughn is starting to look like you're playing him all wrong. You have no clue how he's supposed to be played. And if you want to run Ezekiel Elliott to the edges and Deuce Vaughn in the middle, you have no clue what your team is. You have no clue what your personnel is capable of. Because Zeke can't get to the outside and turn that corner. And there's no cutback lane for him right now because you're dealing with a rookie offensive tackle and a rookie center. I'll be honest, I thought your offensive tackle wasn't great this week either.
Fair.
Can Zeke be quick enough to cut? If there is, can he cut into that cutback lane?
No, he can't. Look at Alvin Kamara yesterday. Alvin Kamara runs that perfectly. He knows exactly where his cutback is in this. This is Arian Foster had the same great successes that Alvin Kamara had because of the same running scheme. And Kamara yesterday, once he sees the cutback lane, boom, he hits it and he's gone. And Zeke can't do that if he has that kind of hole that opens up. But even getting around the corner to the edge, he's not going to be able to get it. So if you're saying to yourself, which we thought yesterday, Jerry told us before the game too, there's a difference between saying you're committed to the run and actually being committed to the run. The Cowboys decided yesterday, we're going to be committed to the run early in the game. And then they found themselves down 21-3. Like they found themselves down so quickly, they were like, oh crap, we got to figure out what to do here. But being committed to the run without a good running game is bad. That's bad for your entire team because it's not going to set up any of the things that the Cowboys could have done successfully yesterday. Kevin, I told you what the plan was. Yeah. You run the ball enough, those safeties are going to crash down. And they wanted to plan that way. They knew that plan would work. But then they were down by so much that they couldn't even, they were like, we can't even run the ball anymore. Safeties could stay back. And if you're going to play that kind of game, if you're going to say, okay, we're going to let the safeties play back, then you have to be perfectly clean. You can't have holding calls. You can't have those stupid mistakes that put you behind the chains. And that's what happened all day yesterday. The Cowboys were a Charlie Chaplin show of calamity.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, 21 carries for 68 yards. It was rough. And even last week, I know you can look at it as a whole and be like, hey, 25 for 102. But when you were watching it, it didn't feel like a particularly captivating run game. I know CeeDee Lamb looked pretty solid, but
you're banging up against stuff. You know?
It's rough. And now I hope that Dalvin Cook has Alvin Kamara left in him. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you know what?
Well, that's a weird way of saying it.
It is a weird way of saying it. But Mike, you texted me yesterday and you asked if Zeke was hurt. And I said,
honestly, because I didn't know, because I'm following it. They have the Seahawks and Patriots game on, which makes sense, in Seattle. And so I'm following it on my phone play by play. And I'm like, did I miss something on Friday or Saturday?
And no, it was. Here's what I feel, because the way it looked, I feel like they were starting to prepare you for, it's going to be Dalvin Cook starting Ezekiel Elliott as your backup. He's going to be in on third downs to protect for pass situations, but that's where Ezekiel Elliott, like, that's all he can really do at this point. And Jerry kind of understands that too. The Cowboys understand that. But to have a running back that can actually hit the hole and go once he gets there, you're praying right now that it's Dalvin Cook. Otherwise, you're having to spend some of your assets for next year in the draft.
Do you think that they were intentionally lying to us, the Dallas Cowboy fan? Or do you think it only took them one game to go, oh no, we were wrong on Zeke?
I think it's the first one. And the reason why is it's not fun to be like, hey, do you see how many first or second highest paid players in the league. We either have or are going to have. So we're going to have to cut corners at other positions. Like, that's not a fun thing to say, but instead you can be like, do you remember how great Ezekiel Elliott was? Whoo, he's back. And it was weird because we talked with Jerry last week and he said, don't judge him by his last year in New England. And I'm like, well, hold on. The year before that, you judged him and cut him.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly is the reason? And so I think...
And then they benched him,
yeah,
at least to start the game. He
I
was
think
not
they were
running.
Lying. Yes, yeah. I absolutely do.
And this team is still desperately in need of a second playmaker. CeeDee Lamb is fantastic. You got to find a second playmaker if you want to be an explosive offense.
Because I keep thinking it could be, or I want it to be Cooks. It's not. Like, thus far, it's just not.
Nope.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You guys want more football?
Let's do more stuff.
Go into it. What was the most impressive team performance or surprising result of the upset-filled NFL weekend? But the Cowboys will still get some play there, too. We'll do an X-ray here on The Fan.
Murray's looking for him. Pressure coming. Got away from Verse. Still on the move. Still on his feet. Throws to the end zone. It is caught by Elijah Higgins for the touchdown. Magic from Murray.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 through The Fan. I have a feeling that the Cowboys will probably come up in this segment as well. But what was the most impressive team performance or maybe even surprising result of what felt like an upset-filled weekend? Maybe week two is too early because you're like, you think you know what these teams are, but not really. I'm going to throw out Kyler Murray. 17 of 21, 266 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, also ran 5 times for 59 yards and had a perfect, if not unstable, 158.3 passer rating. It was incredible. They beat the freaking crap out of the Rams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
41-10.
Was your favorite part of that then the Marvin Harrison got involved in the game to start things off?
I'm sure the NFLPA, I don't know, fanatics might not have been thrilled about that, but I did like seeing him get more involved.
Yeah, no, it was, and I think I need to make sure about this real quick. Did you see the statistic on his first half?
No.
Here, I got it for you right here, Kevin. Marvin Harrison Jr. is the first rookie to have 4-plus receptions and 2 receiving touchdowns in a first quarter since his dad.
What?
Marvin Harrison did it in 1996. In fact, Harrison Jr. had more receiving yards in the first quarter in week two than his dad had in any single game as a rookie in 1996.
Wow. It would have been cool if they played the Chargers, because I'm assuming that was Jim Harbaugh throwing him the ball.
Oh, dude. That
maybe so. Maybe so.
I don't know. I'm just
that would have been really
so
cool.
So, yeah, Marvin Harrison Jr. getting involved. But, yeah, Kyler Murray looks fantastic in this game, and maybe they found their stride. Maybe last year, Kevin, the injury, he was still recovering from all of it, and he is completely back, and he'll never get hurt again.
Okay, I hope that is the case. I like Kyler Murray a lot. Now, that's my answer. Where do you guys
the Rams
go?
Losing that one that now, bad
them or
the,
just getting crushed mm-hmm. by an Arizona team that all of a sudden now I'm like, huh, okay, what do you got?
Especially that being a division rival, yeah, like that. Now, and I understand the Rams too shorthanded in a lot of areas. Offensive line, they had some injuries in a lot of different areas. And is Cooper Kupp ever okay? Is always the question for him.
Yeah, now it's Puka Nacua, okay, man. It's going to be out even longer, it sounds like.
But yeah, Kevin, I think that was my, aside from the Cowboys, that was the one that I was looking at too.
See, because I really thought you guys were going to go cut 17. I want to play this one for you. I want you to picture this, if you can, while okay. It's happening. An NFL official who is not only keeping up with, he is outpacing the San Francisco 49ers defensive backfield, which almost led to a screen situation. He had to hold up for a second. Listen to this.
Darnold getting messy, going deep, and he's got Jefferson. He's got Jefferson. It's a foot race downfield with Brown shifting gears, getting a block. That's 6. 97 yards.
97 yards. Sam Darnold threw the ball from the end zone. I mean, I know he didn't throw it all the way to the other end zone, but he threw it from in his own end zone. But this NFL official, you got to watch a video if you haven't seen it. He is smoking the two 49ers defenders, which probably explains why Jefferson was like, I got this. And at one point, he has to slow down because Jefferson is looking to use him for a screen through the other two defenders. It is pretty impressive.
127 total yards for Justin Jefferson on that play. So because he went all the way to one sideline and then came all the way back to score the touchdown. It was a 97-yard touchdown with, I guess, is that 30 extra yards of of running to go into it. Kevin, that is a very impressive win by them. Sam Darnold had one significant mistake, and it was near the end zone. He threw that interception to Fred Warner, and it was bad. Like, it was just a bad throw right over the middle. Fred Warner was standing right there. Aside from that, though, Sam Darnold was pretty damn good on a lot of different fronts. And the Niners looked lost on offense. They looked like they could not get anything truly going on their offensive end.
And especially when you hear the news about CMC going to injured reserve. I'm not saying like the Vikings are ready to dominate because they beat a terrible Giants team in the first week. But remember, they did thump them good. Like, they didn't eke that victory out. And they just beat San Francisco. So if you're the Vikings sitting at 2-0, you got to be like, hell yeah.
It's also one of those situations when you're looking at the stats, you're like, how were they lost on offense? Well, when you got time to score, they were as bad as the Cowboys in the red zone. Like, they were miserable in the red zone yesterday, too. I felt like they probably could have gone to Jordan Mason a little more in the red zone.
Okay.
And they were in, again, this is a second week in a row where Ayuk has had a ball like that he could have caught in the end zone for a touchdown, and he didn't. And there was a lot of talk about him in the offseason and where he would land. He lands back with San Francisco, and he hasn't been as helpful as they need him to be.
I'll tell you what, that play for 97 yards, here's what's more impressive. Muggsy Young threw the ball 26 times for 84 yards. So that one play for 97.
So bad.
Old Muggsy in Carolina, 18 of 26 for 84 yards.
It's looking rough.
3.2 yards per, I guess, average. Jeez. But he did throw a very catchable ball to the Chargers.
Other team. Yeah.
So that was good for him.
So he
threw it 26 times for 84 yards.
I was asked the question, Kevin, even before 3.2? The show started.
Yeah, 3.2.
On the fan text, somebody said, Corey, were we wrong about Sam Darnold all along? And I said, either I'm wrong about Sam Darnold completely.
Oh, you best believe tomorrow it's coming back up, Corey.
Or I am completely right about Kevin O'Connell. So that we'll get into that Could conversation be. Tomorrow then, because I think he's a really good coach.
Oh, wait, I forgot. Bryce did get to 90 yards because he ran the ball for 6 yards.
Look at that.
So how many times did he run the ball?
One time.
Okay, I really thought you were going to be like 8 times for 6 yards.
People thought it was like a bear crawl because he was so low to the ground.
Oh, also, in impressive wins, Kevin. Yep. I'll give the Chiefs an impressive win.
Yes. I did not think they were going to win that game.
They didn't look. I mean, Travis Kelce got 3 targets. He had 1 catch for 4 yards.
You think all those
screw my fantasy team?
You think all those engagement rumors are
maybe
bogging them down?
Well, I don't think so. I think Cincinnati has played Kansas City enough. They're like, we're taking away their bread and butter. And that obviously does make things a little more difficult for them. The Bengals showed up. They were prepared much, much better than they were in the game against the Patriots. They weren't a lot better. And, Kevin, do you feel like the Chiefs just get the benefit of the doubt a lot of times from
sure.
the referees?
Sure.
That pass interference.
The ref of Chiefs, I know, is a thing that is out there in the world.
That pass interference late in the game was clearly a pass interference. He got run into. The dude goes up in the air. He gets run into. That's clearly a pass interference. There were a couple of other plays throughout that game that you were like, are you kidding me right now? And it went against the Bengals and for the Chiefs. And I think that's just a natural. They're the team that's the hottest team. Everybody loves them. They're going to get those. Everybody probably gets them, but it's stunk.
Do you prefer the Chiefaries? That's not bad.
It might be work. Yeah. It might work.
Okay. Yes. I do think that sometimes they get the benefit of the call, but what I also think is the Chiefs consistently put themselves in a position where if they get a beneficial call, they can win the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. Like, and that is, yeah.
They know that they have a kicker that can kick the field goal when they need to. They know they have a quarterback that can get them into position to make that field goal. They know exactly what they're doing on that team.
I want to throw off cut number 19 because, man, oh, man, you look at the Chiefs is now, the Chiefs are 2-0. They have won both of those games by the most razor-thin margin possible. But the team they beat in week one that I thought, hey, you can hold your head high, you're doing just fine, you lost by a foot or maybe even an inch. Then they had this game cut 19.
Madison, the running back. Madison takes the handoff, pushes forward and in. And a big touchdown off the Lamar Jackson INT.
The Ravens losing to the Raiders, and now the Ravens are 0-2.
Easy game this Sunday.
Holy moly. By the way, that line has shifted, at least early on. It looked like it was going to be a pick'em, and now I think the Ravens are favored by 1.5. At least that's what I saw late last night. I'll go...
We own the AFC North.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying, Corey?
Yeah. We're really good against the AFC North.
But
things go really well there.
The Ravens look like they're going to be a slight favorite in that game. But, man, that loss to the Raiders feels... I wonder if that's going to be, like, a big kind of pivot point for their season. Not to say that they're going to fall apart after this, but I wonder if they're going to be in a position at 9-8-ish where they look back at this game and they're like, son of a gun.
Well, I'm with you on that. I'm also, look, the Cowboys had a loss that reminds you of what this team looks like in the playoffs.
Fair.
And the Ravens have had a start to the season that reminds them of what happens to, I hate saying this because I think we all like them, but Lamar Jackson looks like playoff Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Where it's like, dude, can't you help us out here because you are very talented, this and that. But when it comes to, hey, we're down in the fourth quarter. And he's like, I like being up in the fourth quarter so I can use my legs and I can kind of run out the clock. And we have the Derrick Henry guy now. And you're just like, no, but so what happens is we get down and you need to drive the ball down the field quickly. He's like, I can't do that. That's not my game. That's not my style. We have to play with the lead for me to be a successful quarterback. And so two teams are now going to play this Sunday in Arlington that both fan bases have been just blown up in the face on, like, this is what your team usually looks like when it's a playoff situation. And if you get down by quite a few points, Cowboy fans, you know your team loves to quit. And if you're down by quite a few points in the fourth quarter, Lamar cannot bring you back.
The KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's hear from our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnuolo, and also talk about the number one in the by God nation, Texas Longhorns, next in The Fan.